Hello and welcome to another edition of the Did You Know Show with your host, Fred Hasse. I'm Ray, a physics teacher.
And I'm Holly, a Spanish teacher.
And I'm Fred Hasse, a semi-retired meteorologist.
And we talk about a wide range of science topics on this show. And this week's show is going to focus on monsoons. For more information,
check out dykshow.blogspot.com. And also you can email Fred at fredhasse@gmail.com. Hasse is spelled H-A-A-S-E.
And we all have access to that email account, so questions for any of us, that account will work. Also, we should mention that next week's show, or not next week, the next show will be about jet streams. And in particular, at some point, we'll talk about the low-level jet here in the plains and its effect on severe weather. All right, so should we jump into monsoons, Fred?
Okay, ready to go.
All right, well, get us started. Monsoons.
Monsoon, okay. Well, most people have a little bit of a misconception what a monsoon is. When people hear the word monsoon, they think of torrential rains that last for weeks and weeks.
That's what I thought it was.
But
and that's the first that's, thing that does jump into my mind as well, even as a meteorologist. But, yeah, keep going.
But, however, heavy rain is only a result of one of the monsoons, but some monsoons, in fact, are very dry.
Yes.
And the monsoon, the word comes from Arabic. The Arabic word is, I think the pronunciation is something like malsim, which literally means seasonal wind. And that's what the monsoon really is. The wind will blow from one direction during a season or two and then blow the other way for a season or two.
And fairly consistently, so every day, generally the same direction?
That is correct.
Okay.
And the monsoon in reality is kind of like a giant land and sea breeze.
Which we talked about on the last show.
Right, and that's one reason I decided to follow the discussion with the monsoon, a discussion on the monsoon, because it kind of follows. In the case of the monsoon, large land masses will heat up warmer than the oceans, causing the air to flow in towards the continent, and this produces the summer monsoon.
And this continues, unlike our land sea breezes, this doesn't switch at night. It continues at night.
That's correct.
Okay. So do we have some examples of some places where we can look at monsoons or take a concrete example of one?
Well, right now, at this time of the year, we're kind of between monsoons. We're in the spring, late spring. Usually at this time, the winter monsoon over Asia and over North America die out or weakens, and then later on in late spring, early summer, it's replaced by the summer monsoon.
Okay.
So right now, there's not a good example of a monsoon in progress.
Well, during when there would be one, like what part of the world are we talking? Or excuse me, not what part of the world. What kind of like wind speeds and like what if we were in the monsoon season, what kind of weather and wind speeds and directions are we talking about?
All right, of course, this depends on which monsoon and where.
Yes.
But for example, how strong they can get, the summer monsoon will push winds to 40 miles per hour or greater along the coast of Somalia and just offshore the Arabian Peninsula.
Okay.
And so, of course, this is where the monsoon was named. Additionally, the winter monsoon in the East China and South China Sea frequently go well into storm force at times during the winter. So they can get very, very strong winds at times. Other times, they're kind of more modest. For example, people don't realize it, but North America has a monsoon, too. And you might pick up on this a little bit when you listen to the Weather Channel describing the Southwest monsoon in our desert Southwest. And it is a true monsoon, and it'll cause the winds to blow persistently from the south-southeast along the lower Texas coast almost all summer long, reaching velocities about 30 miles per hour, but more commonly it's around 20, 25 miles per hour.
And why do people traditionally associate rain with the monsoon?
It is because of the British trade with India is partly responsible for that, because during the summer monsoon, as air starts flowing from the Indian Ocean onto the Indian subcontinent, enormous rain will fall. You get up to even 60 inches per month in some parts of eastern India, Bangladesh area, wow, and Thailand.
Wow.
And so as a result, people would first initially are talking about the wind, but gradually it became associated with the rain. But again, in the Indian subcontinent, during the winter, the land cools off and the air starts flowing off of India into the Indian Ocean, and this outflow means a big chunk of India gets practically no precipitation whatsoever during India, so it has the opposite effect.
So the monsoon could be extremely wet or extremely dry. Now, what causes that huge amount of rain, Fred?
In the case of the southwest monsoon during the over the Indian subcontinent, what causes that is are the mountains. On the western, in western India, we have the Ghat Mountains.
So we have the winds going up the mountain and clouds forming, then eventually rain dumping out of them.
Exactly. Also, the Assam Hills in northern Bangladesh and in extreme eastern India, the southerly winds coming in off of the Bay of Bengal will run up those hills and producing enormous rain. In fact, they have gotten as much as 2,000 inches in a six-month period during the summer monsoon. That occurred in Sarapunji, India.
Yes, and at some point on a future show, we'll probably discuss why that upward motion along the mountains causes the precipitation, or do a whole show on precipitation. But then I'm assuming in the summer months, is it mainly the fact that you have the downslope winds making it so they don't get much rain at all?
Well, and,
or is it more than that?
Well, there are more too. Like, for example, now, central India to the southwest of Calcutta, the southwest monsoon does descend off of the Ghat Mountains, and so that they get less rain, only about 30 inches per summer. Still a bunch,
yes,
but far less than the upslope side of the mountains.
Okay.
And so, one of the best ways to, I think, to discuss the monsoon is to talk about the beginning. That during the winter or late winter, the sun angle gets higher and higher on the Eurasian continent, and heating up the air. And finally, in what corresponds to late spring, it becomes warm enough where this air expands upward, creating an upper high over northern India and sometimes over the Himalayas. This upper high causes air to flow away from the area towards the oceans in the upper levels, dropping the pressures of the ground. And this starts the southwest flow in the low levels.
And this is this isn't overrided by any other large-scale features. This is able to dominate their weather pattern for the entire summer.
That is correct.
Okay.
And they do have little waves develop within the monsoon, but that southwest flow and the low levels and the upper levels over southern India, at 40,000 feet, the winds blow the other way, blowing in from the east-northeast. And this flow persists all from June, July, in August, and then starts falling apart a bit in September. Then in October, November, it falls apart completely. And then in late November and December, it is replaced by its opposite, the winter monsoon, where the cooling of the land causes the pressures to drop in the upper levels, causing the air to start flowing in over India, increases the surface pressure at the ground, causing the air to flow offshore all the way around.
So from a thermodynamic standpoint, it is extremely similar then to the land sea breeze, except on a much larger scale and longer duration.
That is correct.
Okay. Which we've discussed in length in our previous show. So if that was a little bit quick for anybody, we talked about that quite a bit in the last show.
Right. So just the monsoon circulation can be considered very much like just a big land and sea breeze phenomena.
Okay.
Now, the Eurasian continent has a complication, and this complication is the Himalaya Mountains, the Tibetan Plateau. These mountains are so high that the air cannot flow from one side of them to the other side. So they effectively act like a dam.
Okay.
So the Eurasian continent actually develops two monsoons during both the summer and the winter. One that develops on the south side of the Himalayas, and the other one that develops on the north side.
That's interesting.
And not only that, but actually North Africa participates in the same monsoon system. So it's a huge scale system, including North Africa and about the southern two-thirds of the Eurasian continent.
Okay. I guess that makes that large of an area, and if it's that long-lived, that probably makes forecasting a lot easier in that part of the world during the monsoon. Is that correct?
That's correct. So really, however, there are monsoon disturbances which will cause the rainfall to increase
right.
and then decrease. During the winter, it'll cause a flow, monsoon flow, the winds to increase and decrease. So that part you have to forecast. But compared to other weather systems, it is relatively easy.
Okay.
Now, one thing I can start talking about in more detail, the winter monsoon, that as the Eurasian continent cools off, we already talked about what happens south of Himalayas, that the air cools and starts flowing off of India into the Indian Ocean. You develop in the upper levels a westerly jet going along over northern India, and this can get quite strong, staying south of the Himalayas. Then on the north side of the Himalayas, it gets very cold, and southern Russia and, eastern Russia and all the way over to the Pacific Ocean, the temperatures during the winter get colder there than anywhere else in the northern hemisphere during the winter. This extreme cold over the land causes what we would call the Great Siberian High to develop.
Okay.
Go ahead. This high develops close to Lake Baikal, which is located in southern Russia, close to the border of Mongolia. It's a crescent-shaped lake, and the high center averages a little to the southwest of the lake. To the north of the high, the very cold air that forms over the snow will slide northeastward into the Arctic Ocean. The part to the east, further east in eastern Siberia, flows eastward into the Sea of Okhotsk and into the Bering Sea, just off of the coast of Russia. It also flows southeastward across China into the East China Sea. And this outward flow is the winter monsoon to the north of the Himalayas.
Okay, and I think we'll put a map of this region, maybe a topographical map, so people can see what you're talking about with the before with the mountain ranges and everything. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. So continue on, Fred.
All right, and since this air is from southern Siberia and Mongolia is so very cold, the water vapor pressure is exceedingly low. And therefore, there's practically no precipitation. Just a few thin flakes of snow is all that falls over most of Siberia during the winter monsoon. China is virtually rainless except for the southern part and the part near the coast.
Okay.
but otherwise it's exceedingly dry. And as a monsoon flow goes into the East China Sea, and then it goes into the South China Sea, to the west of the Philippines, and also south of China, it picks up some moisture, and some of it impinges into South Vietnam, where it actually can yield winter rain in that area due to the upslope over the mountains.
Okay.
Then the air continues to flow southwestward in the South China Sea, reaching Malaysia and to the west of the island of Borneo. Then it pivots around as it crosses the equator and becomes a northwest monsoon. Northeast monsoon north of the equator, and when it crosses the equator, it becomes a northwest monsoon and heads for the Australian continent, which is being heated during the Australian summer, which is, of course, the same time as our northern winter.
Okay.
And this monsoon flow brings in heavy precipitation to northern Australia, which is locally known simply as the wet.
The wet. So now, in northern Australia, then that's considered a monsoon there as well for them?
Yes, it is. It's okay. Part of the monsoon.
It's
right.
Part of the monsoon. Okay, so it's not just the wind direction is it stays the same as in all these other places as well.
That's right. It's pretty persistent.
It's persistent. It's not that the monsoon has made it more likely. It's a persistent wind direction there in Australia as well.
And the northern part.
The northern part. Okay.
Okay.
That I did not know.
And the only disturbance is occasionally northern Australia will be affected by a tropical cyclone, the same thing as our hurricanes. They'll cause the winds to blow from a different direction as they pass by. But otherwise, that northwest flow is very persistent.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Now, and of course, I already mentioned the northeast winds blowing across the Indian Ocean. And so that pretty well completes the winter monsoon flow in the low levels. In the upper levels, we mentioned we got a westerly jet blowing over northern India. We have a second jet blowing across central China. These two jets have a tendency to converge east of China over Japan and then head on out into the Pacific. And then reaching the western part of North America a couple of days later. So it's a very far-reaching system.
Yes, I would say.
What time of year did you say that was?
This is the winter monsoon.
Okay.
Winter monsoon begins in late November and reaches its peak in January and early February, and then starts dying out, and then by this time of the year, we're into the intermonsoon season.
Okay.
Now, as the spring comes on, the reverse happens. The continent starts to heat up. I'm talking about the Eurasian continent. This causes the surface pressures to fall. And then in the low levels, the air starts blowing in from the southwest into India, from the southwest in the South China Sea, from the south and south-southeast through the East China Sea, and into the Sea of Okhotsk. And with this convergent moist flow, this brings abundant rain to southern and eastern Asia and Central Asia, talking about now inland in places like Mongolia, Siberia. This is when they get most of their precipitation. Because some of the precipitation from the Pacific makes it all the way to, Lake Baikal area.
Okay.
Now, one of the great indicators of the Eurasian monsoon is the development of the what is known as the tropical easterly jet. It develops. It originates in the East China Sea, swinging southwestward across the South China Sea, then across the Malayan Peninsula, across southern India, to Somalia, Africa, across Africa all the way to southern Nigeria, into Liberia, where it goes into the Atlantic. And this is at about 4,000 feet, and it blows, like I already said, from the northeast and east, and it goes in the opposite direction from the low-level monsoon flow.
Okay, what effect does that have on the weather for those regions?
One very important effect is that it tends to hold down the development of tropical cyclones.
Okay.
In the northern Indian Ocean, they usually have they call them tropical cyclones there, and when they reach hurricane strength, they're called severe tropical cyclones. And the season reaches a peak during May and early June. When the summer monsoon starts, the fact that the low-level winds are blowing from the southwest, the upper winds are blowing from the east-northeast, prevents tropical cyclones from developing. So this causes a pause in the tropical storm season in the northern Indian Ocean.
Okay,
It also puts the typhoons, which are also tropical cyclones, will develop and move into the South China Sea, and the monsoon shear tends to tear them apart and weaken them.
Should probably define shear, Fred, for those that are listening.
Well, shear is simply a change of wind speed and wind direction with height.
Okay, so the example we're talking about earlier for causing the pause, where the winds were one direction at one level and different at another, that was an example of shear because of the direction being different, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And that so over the South China Sea, you got the southwest monsoon in the low levels, and you got the northeast easterly tropical jet above it, and that tends to split typhoons in two, the low-level circulation tending to drift north of the area of squalls. It usually does not dissipate the storm, but it certainly weakens them.
So shear is bad for hurricanes.
That's correct.
And if we ever do a show on tornadoes, it's interesting. Shear is good for tornadoes. So, but anyway, continue on.
So this tropical easterly jet is very important on governing the status of the tropical storm season. And, of course, I already mentioned about the low-level winds running up the mountainsides, dropping enormous amounts of rains. Also, as those moist winds converge towards the east side of the heat lows that develop over the Eurasian continent, that also causes rain to fall even in the interior. But there are exceptions. Mm-hmm. Now, in the Near East and places like Iraq and Saudi Arabia, the summer monsoon is a strong northwest wind. Very dry, very hot. You can have temperatures like 120 degrees with 25 knot winds and relative humidities around 4 or 5%.
That's hairdryer weather right there.
It'll suck water out of cactus.
Not pleasant. So the monsoon then, I guess we've gone through a good portion. I mean, this affects a lot of people in a good chunk of the world, from everything from 120 degree temperatures and very, very dry to, 60 inches of rain in the summer monsoon. For parts of the world, and then of course the effect on tropical cyclones. So this is a pretty pretty far-reaching concept.
Also, I might mention too that people used to weren't aware of it, but the Weather Channels I think made it is that North America also has a monsoon caused by exactly the same thing. You got the heating during the summer making the North American continent colder than the surrounding oceans, and then during the winter, the continent gets colder than the oceans. This tends to cause mostly flow onshore in most areas during the summer and offshore during the winter. But since North America is a lot smaller, traveling weather disturbances will frequently interrupt the monsoons.
So it's not the wind direction is not as persistent, so it's not as much of an impact on the weather, but it still plays a pretty big role.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Especially in especially in the Western Gulf of Mexico, in the nation of Mexico, Texas, the desert Southwest is quite marked because it causes just a very persistent southeasterly wind, and it really is can be considered a seasonal wind, a monsoon wind.
Okay.
Now, do monsoons alter shipping lanes and shipping routes significantly, to your knowledge?
Well, they certainly do. Yes. In fact, during the sailing ship days, it completely governed the trade routes. For example, during the summer monsoon, the Arabs would hop in their dhows and fly and sail to India. And then they would do their trading and pick up the goods, you know, spices and whatever they wanted from India. And then when the winter monsoon blew the other way from the northeast, they'd ride it back to Arabia. So they would take advantage of this monsoon switching for the trade. Also, it is kind of an interesting effect right here in northeast Mexico and south Texas that the summer monsoon is so persistently from the south-southeast and strong, meaning you're 20 knots or so, that it becomes an important area for wind turbines to be put up. And they're starting to build wind farms there for the generation of electric power.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Interesting.
All right. Does that about wrap it up on monsoons, Fred? Do you have anything else you want to throw
in there? Oh, no, not right there, because anything else I had to say, the monsoon would be best left to the discussion of the jet streams because,
yep.
Because the monsoons and the jets are a little bit tied together.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, very interesting. Quite a few different effects, and hopefully people are more aware of monsoons, and it's just a seasonal wind, and depending on which way it's going, it could have very, very different effects on your local weather. So, all right. I'm Ray, a physics teacher.
And I'm Holly, a Spanish teacher. Please check out dykshow.blogspot.com for any show notes.
And we'll put up maps.
Right.
So that if you had a tough time following where Fred was jumping around the world with his with the winds, we'll have a couple maps up that may help.
Yes. And then email us at fredhaase@gmail.com. Haase is spelled H-A-A-S-E.
Thank you for listening. So long, Fred.
All right, so long.